listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know the hot spots where conflict and war could erupt at any time? Where are they for this year of 2013 around the world? According to one list, they include Syria, Lebanon, Afghanistan, Kenya, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Mali and Nigeria, Pakistan, Turkey, Sudan, Central Asia, and Iraq. And as we speak, North Korean rockets and other tools of war are on alert, ready to attack South Korea. Have you done your homework? Do you know whether these are problems generated within their countries and their governments, or whether some foreign governments may have generated some of those problems? Do you know what role your own government and the big businesses it supports have played in the continuing conflict around our goal? More importantly, do you have hope, or perhaps a plan, for bringing our world to peace? My guest today on Full Power Living has done some homework, and he has a plan. So listen as we talk today about the 12 steps to peace. Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon. We invite you to chat toll-free at 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. And we also have chats on Emotional Pro and Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is Johnny F. Over the past two decades, he's worked and traveled in numerous countries around the world, including the hot spots of Afghanistan, Yemen, Libya, Iraq, and Colombia, and that's allowed him to grasp firsthand the situation in those countries. Trained in conflict resolution, he says that his greatest education evolved from his personal involvement with the 12 Steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. AA has enabled millions of people around the world to change their lives and find peace, and he's one of those millions. Johnny F. says peace is possible. He's with us today to talk about the plan he suggests for achieving that peace, which he writes about in his book, The 12 Steps to Peace. You can find out more about that at peaceanonymous.com also. So, Johnny F., welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Great. So you've written about peace and how we can establish it on our earth, and yet I think we need to start at the point to realize that your own life was not peaceful for you for many years, and it's been that lack of peace in your own life, early life, that have brought you to the point of writing your book, The 12 Steps to Peace. So would you start us by giving us a brief backdrop to this book?
I used alcohol for a long time to deal with the emotional aspects of my life. I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't. You know, my little sister drowned when I was 13 and she was 9, and she drowned playing on a raft that I had a hand in building. And you know, I didn't even realize how much guilt I carried as a result of that. But that really, When I discovered alcohol shortly thereafter, I found that it solved my problem. This stuff worked. It was magic. And I continued to use alcohol for the next 24 years to solve my problems. And, of course, I didn't solve my problems. I only created new ones, and problems went unresolved for years and years and years. Hmm. When I got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a lot of work to do in getting my life straightened out. But what AA did for me, and I think we have a misconception about 12-step programs in the general public, Alcoholics Anonymous isn't so much about stopping drinking as it is about changing the way I think and how I live, so I no longer want to drink. And as I traveled through the Middle East and ultimately ended up at an international convention of AA in 2005, where there were 50,000 people who had gone through similar insanity as I had, the chaos and the violence and the just the unmanageability of life. And now I look at these 50,000 people all gathered together, and what I was hit with was an overwhelming sense of peace. And that's where the seed was planted, and I started to pay attention to that. And over the course of the next few years in my travels, what I began to see was, you know, something so very similar to the thought process that alcoholics have, as we, you know, I can change how I think, courtesy of the 12 steps. And if we can change the way we think about picking up a drink or a drug or gambling or all of these things, why can't we change the way we think about picking up a gun? And it really, that's what really it boils down to for me.
Mm-hmm. That makes it pretty clear. Well, you draw certainly a ton of parallels between alcoholism and the recovery process as well, and what we face in our world. And I wanted to look at a few of those first. One is fear. You basically said that fear is really underlying powerfully the process of drinking, and also fear it also plays a part in our concerns in the world. So talk about fear, please.
My life was riddled with it, and to a degree it still is. I think as we grow and change and learn to live in our world, it doesn't really matter to me whether you're, you know, 14 or 60. You know, I mean, we all have new things that we have to learn to deal with, and that always generates a little bit of fear. I kind of get a kick out of the typical Rambo macho attitude. You know, I love NFL football as much as anybody, but we all experience fear at some level or another. And we're not very good at talking about that. I think, you know, our culture is, you know, we're supposed to be manly and tough and cool and all of these other things. And so while we're busy having our ego play this macho role, fear kind of creeps in there and does a lot of damage in our world. Mm-hmm. When I went to Yemen, the first trip to the Middle East was post 9/11. And it was post Afghan and Iraq invasion. And I didn't realize it, but when I arrived there, my life I was just riddled with fear. It took me about 3 weeks to really discover what it was that was causing me so much trouble, because I just felt so off-center, and I couldn't really grasp what the problem was, and it really boiled down to fear. So I started to ask myself the questions, well, where did that fear come from? And the only thing that I could conclude was that when I stepped off the plane, based on the story that I had been told over and over and over again through the media, that I had accepted the fact, or at least felt, that all of these people in the Middle East wanted to kill all of us from the West. And after about that three-week mark, when I came to that discovery, I started to ask myself if the fear was rational and if it was reasonable. And, of course, we need to be careful wherever we go, whether we're going to parts of every city in North America that have their corners where safety is of concern. But did the people in the Middle East, did the people in Yemen really want to hurt me? Now, at that time, no. My answer was no. I think what they wanted more than anything else, if there was a problem with me, it was that I would be maybe a prime hostage target for economic purposes. But that was based in economics. It wasn't based in terrorism. It wasn't based in fanaticism. It wasn't based in some Islamic terrorist plot, because I was a white human being from a different part of the world. It was simply economics. Mm-hmm. And so the fear that I think that I hear over and over and over again, I think every time a bomb goes off somewhere in the world, we as taxpayers open our wallet and ask, how much will it cost to feel safe? And that fear's been turned into a tool, and it's been used to beat us over the head to have us believe that we have to give up everything in order to feel safe. And we pay dearly, to the tune of billions and billions and billions of dollars, a $550 billion defense budget that I wonder what would happen to that budget if there was peace. So I'm asking the people who really want to look into this and make their own decision. I think the 12 steps is a recipe. I don't want to be in a position where I'm telling anybody what they should think or what they should believe, because that's what we've been told, and I think people need to discover for themselves what their truth is. But, you know, the steps are a journey of self-discovery, and what I've done with them in this case is, instead of looking strictly at ourselves, because we live in a democracy, we have to look at our communities and our nations and ask ourselves, what is the real truth here? And if you're turning on the news and expecting to get it, that's not going to happen. I think you're like me getting off the plane in Yemen full of fear. I'll go back to Yemen tomorrow. I mean, it's a different kettle of fish now, and I think there is a time and a place when we have to be a little more careful than others, but at the same time, you know, I think our fear it's been profitable. Us mm-hmm. being afraid has been very profitable for a group of people, and that's my take on it.
That's really a good point. You know, I was moved after 9/11 to write a booklet called 99 Tips for Mastering Fear. And one of the things I said in it is, not being afraid is much easier said than done, yet it's a primary lesson we need to learn to get us through this horrible segment of history. And I just want to share with you that I lived most of my life in fear, and when I turned 50, I decided I didn't want to do it anymore. So I developed a technique that has helped me quell a lot of the fear, and I'd like to share it with you and with our listeners, if I may.
Sure.
Yeah. Because it fits so well with what you do and what you talk about, Johnny. What I determined is that, you know, we have light and dark and cold and hot. We have opposites here on the earth, and so it occurred to me that when I'm in fear, I'm not in its opposite. And what is the opposite? And for me, I came up with faith, not necessarily a religious faith, but a faith in a larger power. And I realized that when I was in fear, I was you can't be in fear and faith simultaneously. So the trick was to get myself from fear into faith. And the technique that I developed was to ask myself, if in this situation I had a written guarantee from God that everything's going to work out and I'm going to be okay, what would I be looking at? What actions would I be taking? And what decisions would I be making? And to the best of my ability, I started doing that. And other than physical fear, I really haven't experienced fear in the last 20 years. So I just wanted to share that with you, because I often hear people say that we have to deal with fear every day. And yes, it is physically there, but so many of us live in fear. I really would like to get the message out along with you that we don't have to keep living in fear.
So, I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah.
And I love the way you've come to terms with it.
Yes. Well, I was surprised at how effectively it worked. I had... you know, I'd had a tough childhood and an early marriage, and then the marriage broke up, and I was a single parent for 20 years, and I didn't have a family backup, and I didn't have money to live with, and so forth. So there were plenty of reasons for me to be afraid. But I just thought, you know, not only have I had to live my life, but first I have to crawl over the fear to get to living my life. And that seemed like a waste of my energy. So that's what put me on the hunt.
You talk about God, and that's the 12 steps is a spiritual entity. The beautiful part I really love about this is that it's when you referred to God, and this is God as you understand him.
Right.
What makes sense to me, this is about my personal relationship with that little voice deep down inside me that tells me what is right and what is wrong. And if I subscribe to the theory that taking the life of another human being is wrong, why would I do that? And I think I go into great lengths in the book into asking the reader, when is it appropriate? What does it take, you know, to satisfy that little voice when it says, you know, this one deserves to live and this one deserves to die? And I think I think if we did that as individuals, that power, whatever that is to you, and even atheists, there's lots of atheists who've come to Alcoholics Anonymous who have simply came to believe that the power within the fellowship, within the members of society, were a power greater than themselves, and that is what they use as their God when it comes mm-hmm. to... So it's really... We invite the power of the universe, whatever it is, the collective consciousness of the human race, to act as our guiding light. What is best for the people of this world? And if I keep that as my focal point and get away from the selfishness that drives so many of us, especially, you know, business. I mean, it's become, some businesses I think begin to succeed where others fail because they simply become more ruthless.
You know, I want to talk with you more about that. And also to tie in with what you just said, when we return from our break, which we're going to take here in a minute, if I ask myself, does this person deserve to live or die, that's vital for me to do. But as an everyday citizen, I don't often think I'm running around killing people. And so I think we have to address the issue that on our behalf, there are people going around killing people, and we're not paying attention to that fact, and we need to start doing that. So I want you to talk about that when we return from our break. My guest today is Johnny F., who's author of The 12 Steps to Peace, and I want to invite you to call in with your questions and comments at 888-498-0570, 888-498-0570. You're listening to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have just a few announcements. Our upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page on EmotionalPro.com, and next week we're talking with Alicia Howes. She's returning to talk with us about the cultural and world soul stories. We had her on previously to talk about our own soul's path and how we can learn more about it, and we're going to continue today's discussion, but looking at the soul's path from regarding different cultures and people and countries now on the earth. The time has definitely come for us to make monumental changes, and we're doing our best to bring some ideas about doing that to you here on Full Power Living. So join us next Thursday to continue this investigation. If you can't listen to our live broadcasts on Blog Talk Radio or EmotionalPro.com, subscribe on iTunes. And we also want to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Keep those letters coming. I appreciate getting email letting me know where you are, what you think of Full Power Living. You can certainly suggest people to be on the show as well. So today I'm talking with Johnny F., who has been trained in conflict negotiation. He's a recovering alcoholic, a world traveler, and a peace activist who's written a book called The 12 Steps to Peace. Now, Johnny, before the break, I raised the question here. You were saying we people need to ask ourselves about killing other people. And the question exists whether I, as an American citizen doing my daily life, really believe that I am killing other people. And, maybe I'm just not aware of the footprint I have on the world. Can you talk about that?
It's interesting. I wrote that down, the words that you used, on our behalf. And I really want to invite you and the listeners to really ask the question, on whose behalf did we go to war for? I read an article the other day that stated that Dick Cheney's company, Halliburton, received just under $40 billion in government contracts during the invasion. And now I am told, although I have not been able to verify this, I have been told by a Halliburton official when I was in Iraq that they have a contract now with the Iraqi government to manage the oil field in Iraq on behalf of the government of Iraq. So they're getting a percentage out of every barrel of oil that comes out of the ground in Iraq. Mm. And so I really want to ask that question, on whose behalf did we invade Iraq? I think the other thing I'd like to do, Eileen, is that one of my favorite quotes in the book is one that I borrowed from Megan Stack in her book, Every Man in This Village is a Liar. And she's written a chapter about a number of different countries in the Middle East, and it's I'm supposed to be on here, you know, trying to sell my book. this is such a beautiful, well-written, accurate portrayal of what it's like for the average human being in the Middle East in a variety of different countries. And this is what she wrote. Here is the truth. It matters what you do at war. It matters more than you ever want to know, because countries, like people, have collective consciousness and memories and souls. And the violence we deliver in the name of our nation is pooled like sickly tar at the bottom of who we are. The soldiers who don't die for us come home again. They bring with them the killers they became on our national behalf and sit with their polluted memories and broken emotions in our homes and schools and temples. We may wish it were not so, but action amounts to identity. We become what we do. You can tell yourself all the stories you want, but you can't leave your actions over there. You can't build a wall and expect to live on the other side of memory. All of that poison seeps back into our soil. And when I read that to people, I usually follow it up with this question. Do you now know why we end up with guns in our schools? Because this is how we think. This is who we've become. We become what we do. And the only thing that can change this, because politicians don't want to change this, there's so much money at stake. The lobbyists feed the government, feed our legislators. The campaign contributions from major corporations, they're making billions of dollars, and it's our money during war. It's up to us. And that's what the 12 steps are about. It was two alcoholics who started this, helping each other to change their lives, and it's developed in 150 countries, regardless of religion, so we can't use that Muslim thing anymore. Regardless of religion, regardless of ethnicity, we can change. And this is something that everybody in the world, this recipe has worked in 150 countries. All we have to do is know the truth about who and what we are and ask ourselves if we can, if we really want to continue doing this.
Well, you know, Johnny, I've been a psychotherapist for over 40 years, and one of the things I've noted is that when an individual goes to change, they fall apart first. And then there's kind of an empty period, and then they're able to start rebuilding. And I'm sure you had that experience when you were going through AA and before. And it appears to me that, you know, I read that big long list at the top of the show of all the countries that are experiencing unrest and are considered hotspots right now. I mean, when in history have we had so much war going on so many places on the earth? It seems like we're falling apart now. Like, this is the opportunity for us to do something different.
I totally agree with you. I think it's time for it's time for us to step up. And you know, the sad part of this is that in so many places around the world, America has developed a bad name. And the American people are wonderful people. The people in Cambodia are wonderful people. The people in Afghanistan are wonderful people. It's a very small group of Americans who are making a ton of money, a very small group of radicals in Afghanistan who I wonder sometimes, like Eisenhower said, we create enemies so there's somebody to buy our bombs. So, you know, like, is this part of the plan to keep the big war machine going? I really don't know. I have no idea how and why all of this happens. All I know is this. Is that millions of people have changed their lives by taking a good hard look at themselves. I could no longer blame everybody else in the world for my drinking. I couldn't blame everybody else for my problems. I can only change me, because when I try and change you, I create conflict.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's we have to look at ourselves.
Right. But that's all part of our efforts to control, and especially if we think we can't control ourselves, isn't it easier to, don't we think it's easier to try to control others?
Of course, looking at ourselves is the most difficult part of life. And
right.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you start talking about, you know, the falling apart, and we call it bottoming out in the addiction business. I mean, you hit your bottom. You realize that you can no longer continue living the way you've been living, that something has to change.
Uh-huh. Well, in individual therapy, what happens, or what I've observed, is that people are afraid of making change. It's scary because it puts takes excuse me, because it takes you into the unknown, and so we tend to start building pain inside of ourselves, and we put up with the pain a long time until the pain of where we are finally seems like it couldn't be any bigger if we go and try something new. And it seems to me that's the same situation we're in as cultures. What do you have to say about that?
You just described my life. And the last thing I wanted to do was quit drinking. I thought my life was over when I quit drinking. I really believe that dying was just only marginally worse than quitting drinking. It had become so ingrained and so much a part of me, and that change was frightening. The only thing that was worse, living the way I was living, became more frightening than changing.
Right.
So ultimately, I mean, where are we at? And that's why I keep asking people, and I've been asking the same question to people as I contemplated and through the writing of this book, can we continue as we have? And I don't recall if anybody's ever said yes. You know, everybody seems to recognize the fact that we must change, but we still continue to do the same things over and over and over again. Last year, America sold 80% of the weapons sold in the world last year.
Mm.
Good for business.
Mm-hmm. But now you very pointedly bring up in your book, The 12 Steps to Peace, and I'll put it in my terms, but you bring up this notion that our government was created for the people, by the people, and of the people, and yet it's not operating that way. It's for the corporation, of the corporation, and by the corporation, as cooperating with our government, according to your thesis. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's a reasonably accurate assessment.
Okay, enlighten me.
Well, it's. I think, you know, I mean, there's certain aspects of our life that are still maintained in the best interest of the population, but I find it almost amusing, and that there's really nothing funny about it, but, I mean, we're closing schools, but we have all kinds of money for the war effort. I think, you know, The people in the military that I have talked to who are very knowledgeable about, we're not talking about foot soldiers here, we're talking about people at the other end of the spectrum who've basically told me, you know, weapons, oil, and drugs, that's what we do. And my response to that was, what about freedom and democracy? And they laughed. You know, weapons, oil, and drugs, that's good for business. So,
you know, go ahead.
No, it's just, I think the taxpayers, the people's perception, if they knew the truth, if they really knew the truth, they would be appalled. And our part in the system is that we pay. You know, we pay. We fund the whole thing. They're you know, corporations and some corporations. There's a lot of very, very good companies out there that don't need to be given a black eye. But at the same time, when you look at the lobbyists, when you follow the money, when you look at the campaign contributions, you know, Citizens United, all of that stuff, where does Joe on Main Street fit into that? And basically, we get the bill. And there's a very, very small group they seem to be doing extremely well. And we get the bill. They get the profit. And that just seems to, you know, that's how it is, and that's how it was in Iraq. And there's a similar situation in Afghanistan. So,
You are very courageous in the middle part of your book in bringing out some of the research that you've done, talking about how we, how our government, our CIA, certain corporations, on our behalf and their own behalf, have gone into such countries as Ecuador and Guatemala and Honduras and Afghanistan and whatever, usually third world countries, and essentially destroyed them so that they could, or destroyed their economies at any rate, and as you point out, killed hundreds of thousands of people as well, so that they could make more money. And when I read it, it was almost breathtaking how courageously you put that out there. You know, so I just want to comment on what a powerful thing that is. And as you point out, you're only scratching the surface with the research.
And I do invite people to take all of that with a grain of salt and do their own homework. My goal, Eileen, was to try and find a way to present this information in a manner that would create a need in people to find out more about what's really going on in this world.
Well, and you were successful with that.
Well, thank you. You know, it goes back a long way, and I think we've always had business and government scratching each other's back, and I think there was for a long time, those in the know just accepted that as part of the way it was. It seemed to be we could quite easily tolerate that when it was happening in Ecuador and Chile and some of these other countries, but when it's come home now. And I think we see a lot of that happening in Wall Street and some of these other endeavors, all Iraq and Afghanistan, to be sure, where what's in the best interest of a few CEOs seems to come ahead of what's in the best interest of millions and millions and hundreds of millions of taxpayers and people who would much rather live in peace than deal with what's going on, to picking up their children in body bags. I mean, it's completely unacceptable. And
yes. How do you deal? When my son was about 3 years old, he's 35 now, so this was quite a while ago, my father came to visit. My father was a career military person. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. And we discovered that it was my father who was in charge of creating the sites for all the radar installations down the west coast of the United States. He never talked about his work, so I didn't know that previously. And my little 3-year-old son, who was fascinated with the radar dome that was near our home, said to him, "But those are used to fight people. Those are used for war. And war is not good." And my father's response was, "Well, what are we going to do about the bad people?" And it seems to me that a lot of people have that idea that we're the good people and then there are the bad people and we have to keep going with war in order to protect ourselves against the bad people. What have you got to say to that?
We have to defend ourselves. I am no more anti-military than I am anti-alcohol. I mean, you want to have a beer, go have a beer. I mean, the thing is, it's not a question of defending ourselves. The question is, has it gotten out of control?
Has our
military and the government resources at the disposal of a few people been utilized at the expense of the taxpayer for their own personal gain? And I think you referred to part of my appraisal of some of the pattern established historically about the involvement between corporations and government. And we've arrived at a whole new level of corruption. Things are completely out of control, and Yeah, I think some of these things in the past were maybe side ventures by the government and corporations, you know, that happened in the process of running the country. But it's become epidemic. And it's like they're looking at the taxpayer as the cash cow who's simply going to fund all of their activities and enjoy, well, I mean, where's the profit from the oil in Iraq going? And I think it might be appropriate at this time to note that Halliburton has they have a major office in the Cayman Islands. They don't like paying taxes either. So they're making billions and billions and billions of dollars off of government contracts, and yet where's their office? I mean, is this the kind of corporate citizen that America wants?
Mm-hmm. Or that we want to say is a person and can contribute untold amounts to political contests and so forth. Okay, it's time for our second break, Johnny. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about your solutions, the things that you suggest as the blueprint or as a pattern for resolving some of this, or resolving it completely, hopefully. Call us. Okay, thanks. Call us with your questions at 888-498-0570. And I'm talking with Johnny F., who's author of The 12 Steps to Peace. And you can find out more about him by going to peaceanonymous.com. And we'll be talking about the solutions, the pathway to peace, when we return.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us. Four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. All right, welcome back to our third segment on Full Power Living as I speak with Johnny F., who's author of a book called The 12 Steps to Peace, and I do urge you to go to peaceanonymous.com to learn more about Johnny's powerful argument and invitation to all of us to work individually to move ourselves to peace. So, Johnny, briefly, if I can sort of paraphrase AA, the process has to do with, first of all, accepting that there's a problem and that up to this point we haven't been able to deal with the problem. And then we accept that there would be a power that's greater than ourselves that would be able to help us with it. And then we start doing the work of looking at making an inventory, looking at what it is that we've done, who we've hurt. We tell God about it, and we tell another person, at least one, about it. And then we go through the process of making amends to the people that we've hurt, including ourselves, and move into constructing our lives based on a different basis, one that's based on honesty and integrity, and that, as you have so well said, leads us to peace. Is that a fair synopsis of the movement through the process?
Yeah, that's an accurate summarization of the process that we go through. I love what people in AA describe it as. They call it a very simple program, and it is very simple, but it's also very difficult to do. So, it's a difficult thing to hold myself accountable for absolutely everything that I say and do, but that is the goal.
And so what you're doing now is suggesting that this process has worked so well for people of all different types, from all different walks of life, who have had a problem with addiction, and that we have a problem being addicted to war and violence, and that this blueprint, this simple process, could work for us in restoring our world to peace. Am I understanding you correctly with that?
Yes, you've hit the nail on the head, Eileen.
Okay. So then one of the first things we need to do is, as you said a while ago, to accept that things have gotten out of control, we're being run rampant with. We ourselves, if we're not taking charge or not facing the facts, we're running rampant in the world, and that it's such a big problem now that we really can't do it by ourselves. Is that so?
I guess I'm not sure exactly what you mean by doing it ourselves. Are you, as
by
a nation or as a human race or as individuals?
By ourselves, without something much larger than ourselves that we've been calling God. The God, as you are careful, God as each person knows him or her. In a church I went to once, they said God is ever equal to your understanding, which I think is the same concept.
Well, I think if each of us, not everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous agrees with each other on each and every issue. I mean, there's all kinds of room for debate, discussion. One thing that is very interesting about Alcoholics Anonymous, though, is after hanging around bars for a long, long time, I've never seen a fight in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We can disagree, but we get along, you know, and we understand that your perspective on an issue may help somebody else who's struggling. So you're entitled to think and believe as you will. When we look at the world together as a nation, and this is where the transition from me working the 12 steps as an individual, I looked at it as, we live in a democracy. The government is supposed to be representing us. It's supposed to work on our behalf, not the other way around. And if the government's supposed to work on our behalf, it behooves us to know what the government is doing. Because after all, we are paying for it. We are responsible for it. So when we see a couple of hundred elected officials in Washington almost collectively going down the wrong path, and I think most of us agree on that, what is going to hold them accountable? And when we feel, how can I explain this? Helpless is a word that every alcoholic knows. When I came to AA, I felt helpless. Like nobody understands. Nobody can get how I feel. And yet the people in Alcoholics Anonymous understood exactly how I feel. Now, in discussions about war and what's going on in our world and the actions of our government, millions of us feel helpless. As individuals, we feel completely overwhelmed by the problem. We feel like there's nothing we can do, so we bury our head in the sand or turn on American Idol or do anything we can to avoid looking at the problem because we're helpless. We can't do anything about it anyway. Well, the idea with the steps is very simple. If there's millions of us who feel the same way, how can we be helpless? what we are is unorganized.
Nice point.
We all want peace. Everybody, people in Yemen want peace. People in India want peace. People in the Philippines want peace. People in Cambodia want peace. Everybody in the world wants peace, except a very, very small group who seem to be profiting from it, and they have the keys to your bank account. You know, you're paying for that. And the only thing that's going to change this, and I love what Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! Said, the only thing that can change the world is the will of the people. The only thing is, they don't have a recipe. Well, here's the recipe. It's worked for millions of people. This is the recipe. If you choose to do it, it's up to you. You have a choice.
And the recipe is those 12 steps, which involve accepting the problem, asking for help, assessing the damage, taking responsibility, living honestly, living by integrity. And also one of the things you talk about, and I think it is increasingly coming to our awareness, I know as host of this program, I read it over and over and over again, and that is that we have been able to assume that there's unrest happening over there. But in fact, we're all connected. When we hurt somebody else, we're hurting ourselves as well. And that's a really important part of this, is it not?
Exactly. How can I be better off? What can possibly make my life better by hurting another individual? And we seem that we've been divided. We've been sold these wars. It's us and them. And it's not us and them. I feel such a great compassion for these people that I've worked with from all over the world. And they're good people. I landed in the Middle East with this notion that they wanted to kill all of us. And it's just not true. It's just not. There's so many people everywhere want peace. And mothers, I wish mothers ran the world. I mean, you know, go to school, you know, look both ways before you cross the street. Those should be the biggest dilemmas we have to face. We have all the technology, we have all the answers, we're just not doing it because it doesn't profit the right people.
Huh, that's a really great summary, as it were. Tell us briefly about Peace Anonymous, because you've got a format.
The book came out in November, and I'm working on setting up a tour for the summer. I want to do a book signing and do some speaking engagements. So that's in the process of being established. And for right now, the book is available at Amazon, Peace Anonymous, The 12 Steps to Peace. You can check out the website, peaceanonymous.com. The book is also available at some Barnes & Noble. They will order it for you if they don't have it on their shelf. And if people want to know more, they can track me down through Facebook or on the website, and I'm delighted to hear from people. I'm hoping at some point in time to establish a website where it can be interactive, where we can have stories coming from all over the world about people who are involved in war zones and violence, and so we get a much better sense of what's happening on the ground from people's perspective, without having it all filtered by the media. And I think that's been key in my education, is seeing for myself what's happening rather than turning on CNN or Fox and getting their version, because ultimately, I love what Stephen Colbert said at the 2006 White House Correspondents' Dinner. When speaking to all of the 600 journalists there, he said, "You've done a wonderful job of telling both sides of the story, the president's side and the vice president's side." And I thought that was pretty amusing because based on what I had seen, it's a fairly accurate statement. We simply do not know the truth, and if we did, we would be appalled.
Well, in going back to the discussions that were, or not discussions, the statements that were made after 9-1-1, I work with people as they manipulate one another. I have a whole understanding of manipulation. I call it energy sapping. But, you know, what causes it, when we start, and how to end it. And I was fascinated watching George W. Bush, for example, because he was doing something that I knew would work like a charm. And that is whenever the subconscious mind cannot resist repetition. Advertisers know this. If I tell you the same thing over and over and over again, your subconscious mind will begin to take it as truth, which is what I think had happened with you with your with the development of fear that you noticed when you went to Yemen. And so I want to draw people's attention to the fact that we need to be concerned about what messages we allow ourselves to listen to when they're repeated over and over again, especially if they're not loving messages. Do you have any comment on that?
Absolutely. What is key in those scenarios? If you're not sure, and this is one of the beautiful things about this relationship with God as I understand him, and believe me, I don't think there's a preacher or a pope out there who would embrace my concept of God. It's a little bit different. But this higher power, when we hear these things in the world, I ask myself, and I ask that little voice deep down inside, what's the truth here? Is this, you know, and again, fortunately for me, I've had the opportunity to travel extensively around the world, and I don't have that same fear anymore. So, yeah, it's you know, there's a lot of people out there who believe that if it isn't American, it isn't any good, and that's unfortunate. When the world's getting smaller and smaller and smaller, but ultimately the question. It goes back to your how you deal with fear, the scenario that you described. The question we have to ask ourselves, is this helping or hurting people? And really, that's all we have to do. But we have to get out of our head and ask deep down inside, in, to the bottom of our soul, that little voice that God gave us to listen to that tells us the truth about things.
That is a wonderful...
Is this a con game? Pardon me?
That's a wonderful way. Unfortunately, we're going to have to end our program, but I think those are wonderful words to end with. So I need to cut us off here, and thank you so much for writing the book. I want to encourage everybody who is at all interested in peace to get a copy of this book and read it. It really will shake you up inside and get you thinking differently and hopefully get at least some of us moving in the direction of bringing peace to our world in actual fact rather than just in rhetoric. So, Johnny, thank you for the work you've done on yourself, the work you did in writing this book, and for the courage to put it out there to the world and stand behind it. I want to thank you for it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Theo, thanks for being on Full Power Living today. So the websites for Johnny F. are peaceanonymous.com, 12 Steps to Peace, and you can get his you can contact him on Facebook, and you can get his book at Amazon and Barnes and Noble and other places, I'm sure. So thanks again, Johnny, for being with us. Join
Thank
us
you.
Live Okay, good. Join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, which is noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. And remember that next week we're going to continue this exploration about healing our world and going toward peace as I talk with Alicia Howes about the soul stories of the world's people, cultures, and countries. Please join me for the show. Write me, Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, at emotionalpro.com, and tell me about your reaction and your thoughts in terms of Full Power Living. Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer today. Right, thank you, Robin, for a flawless job for now. I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
Listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.